Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. When we have things to talk about concerning protecting the country we love, usually top of the list is communist China and the Chinese Communist Party that misrules it. And when we talk about it, we always love being able to do so with a man who is our first guest. His name is Gordon G. Chang. He is, I think, one of the preeminent authorities on the Chinese Communist Party in America, if not in the world today. Certainly among the most courageous and forthright in his analyses and commentaries and recommendations, which can be found in all kinds of places, including most especially the Gatestone Institute, where he's a distinguished senior fellow. He has a new piece up that we will be talking about in a moment. Gordon is also the author of a number of important books, including a personal favorite of mine, The Coming Collapse of China, and an incredible resource for this program and media outlets around the world. We're always delighted to have a chance to chat with him. Gordon, thank you for taking the time. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Follow him at Gordon G. Chang. I need to make that point as well on Twitter. Gordon, I do follow you there and elsewhere, and I'm most especially anxious to follow your latest report at the Gatestone Institute about the, well, invasion, I think is not too strong a term, of the United States across its southern border by thousands and thousands and thousands of Chinese personnel, seemingly from the People's Liberation Army. Tell us what's going on there, the magnitude of the problem and its implications.
Yeah. For context, we are seeing unprecedented surge of Chinese migrants because of the problems inside their country. There is a sense of pessimism. And so we're seeing middle-class Chinese, poor, and the wealthy leaving China. There is a surge across the southern border, as mentioned. The numbers are unprecedented. But inside that, there are some very disturbing trends. Michael Yan, the great war correspondent, who's been down at the Darien Gap, that's the jungle of about 60, 70 miles that separates Colombia and Panama. And this is the barrier that people have to pass. Because the Chinese, they fly to Ecuador, which permits visa-free entry, and then they make their way up to North America. He has seen packs of males, Chinese males of military age, unattached to family groups, pretending not to speak English. The groups generally range from 5 to 15, and some of them are actually performing rites that are known to be Chinese military soldiers perform, such as drinking blood and other things.
I understand they also, in many cases, are carrying similar, if not identical, packs and canteens and the like. Another tell, don't you think?
Yeah. They're just, obviously, they're going in groups, and then they're obviously not who they say they are. Mark Green, who is chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, spoke to a border protection sector chief who said that they know that some of these males have known links to the Chinese military, the People's Liberation Army, but they're being released into the United States anyway. And so the obvious suggestion is that these are saboteurs. They are coming here to attack America, which means they'd be trying to take down our power lines, poison our reservoirs, start wildfires, detonate bombs in shopping centers. This is just...
Assassinations.
Assassinations, thank you, of officials. And of course, attacks on military bases. But clearly, the Biden administration is not paying attention to this. And this poses a mortal threat to the United States.
Gordon, it would be one thing if they weren't paying attention to it. That's obviously extraordinarily malfeasant. But they're actually intensifying the danger, it seems, by ignoring the problem and worse, helping to disseminate these People's Liberation Army elements all over the United States. Is that taking place?
I think so, because this problem has been known about for some months. Michael Yon and others have been talking about this. And so the Biden administration has to know, and they have to be getting readings from their own border protection agents who are seeing this. And so they're doing nothing about it. And so the question is, why are they not? Because this is a 9/11 risk, but much worse. Because what we're talking about is not just isolated attacks on the American homeland. What we're talking about is war on American soil. This is really the first time since the War of 1812 that Americans have had to fight a war on their own soil.
Right. And are probably, if not completely unprepared for it, certainly ill-prepared for it. And especially if, Gordon, as you and I have talked about now for quite some time, this may be an adjunct to military action by the Chinese Communist Party elsewhere. At the same time, this could be extraordinarily disruptive to any defense we might be making in other parts of the world, let alone, you know, protecting our people. And again, I think it's important just to say, this isn't simply a case of not doing anything about it. They are compounding the danger by, among other things, disseminating it. Let me just ask you, Gordon, at the same time this is taking place, we're also hearing about an expanded Chinese military presence 90 miles off of our coast in Cuba. I don't think we've had a chance to talk since this broke, and then we had Tony Blinken saying over the weekend that we're concerned about it, and they know we're concerned about it, but apparently the administration has no intention of doing anything about it. Our Committee on the Present Danger China, with which you've been extremely helpful over the years since its founding, has recommended a series of actions that should be taken to counter this expanded and, I think, quite dangerous advanced forward deployed capability for the Chinese. What are your thoughts about it and the administration's response to date?
Yeah. The training facility that the Wall Street Journal reported is essentially a full military camp. And from there, China is going to deploy, for instance, surface-to-air missiles, which would interdict and certainly make crossing the southeastern United States by air dangerous. And also, they could have anti-ship cruise missiles, which could prevent the deployment from Norfolk to Asia of the Navy. So really what we're talking about is a full-scale military base, and I'm sure that's what the Chinese have in mind. The administration said that they have raised this with China, but they're not doing anything, I think, effective. And there are things that we can do because Cuba is in trouble. And you know, to tie this with our previous conversation, Cuban agents, you know, are certainly in the United States along with Iranians and others. So on the first day of a war in Asia, we are going to see these acts of sabotage, which we just talked about. And it's going to be facilitated because China will have a large facility just south of Key West. And that means that they will have that infrastructure to make sure these attacks are more deadly and certainly more comprehensive than they otherwise would be if China didn't have that infrastructure.
Yeah. All the more reason why we need to compel, basically, I think, the government of China, the government of Cuba, to end this operation now, not after it's underway. Gordon, we're going to come back in just a moment and talk with you about the slowdown in the Chinese economy, some of those problems you talked about at home, and the possibility that may make climate change less of a disaster. We'll see. Talk to Gordon right after this. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Harvard-trained attorney and PhD Francis Boyle is a preeminent academic specializing in international law. For over five decades, he has closely studied treaties and organizations, many of them the product of ambitious utopians seeking to ban war, redistribute power and wealth, and otherwise reorder the world. In the course of an extraordinarily important webinar yesterday, Dr. Boyle warned that for the first time in history, such globalists are poised to create a, quote, worldwide totalitarian police state, unquote. They would do so via what amount to two World Health Organization treaties, now being finalized with the aggressive support of the Chinese Communist Party, Davos oligarchs, and the Biden administration. These accords would cede American states' constitutional rights to determine health care policy and crush our national sovereignty. Francis Boyle and our sovereignty coalition agree that we must withdraw from the World Health Organization now. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we're continuing our very important conversation with Gordon Chang. Follow him, as I do, at Gordon G. Chang, and particularly I encourage you to check out his recent writings at the Gatestone Institute. Gordon, I wanted to pick up on something you alluded to in connection with that piece, the large numbers of migrants, including some that are not migrants but are saboteurs, we believe, because of domestic difficulties, in the case of economic, considerations. That has been apparently now slowing the Chinese economy at such a rate that it might actually have some impact on the pollution that the Chinese engage in, including that is putatively warming the climate. Talk us through that, if you would.
Yeah, China has been saying that its economy is going to grow 6.2% in the first half of this year, which is ridiculous. They announced 4.5% growth in the first quarter. But in reality, the Chinese economy is at 0%, maybe even negative. What we are seeing are very, very interesting signs because there's just too much debt in China, and it's a problem they have no answer to. So there are now continuing debt defaults, plunging property prices, basically a zero economy. And they have no solution to this because Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, his solution is more state control of the economy, less role for foreign companies, less role for domestic Chinese private entrepreneurs. He's been attacking his own tech sector. And that has created this gloom, which has then caused this outward migration. But we have seen in the past, when there have been slowdowns in the Chinese economy, that China releases less carbon into the air. There is this suggestion now that China might be able to meet its Paris Accord goals 5 years ahead of schedule. Well, you know, normally you would think that that's absurd, but with the slowdown in China, it's possible that they will be putting less carbon in the air because their economy will be contracting. Mm.
We'll be watching this closely, Gordon. Color me skeptical simply because I think the degree to which they are polluting, you know, with their coal plants and so on, would seem to make those goals unachievable, but we'll be watching it, as will you. Let me turn to a topic that we discussed in a very powerful webinar yesterday, Gordon. It was sponsored by a joint project of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and Reggie Littlejohn's Women's Rights Without Frontiers. We call it the Stop Vaccine Passports Task Force. And we focused in yesterday's webinar at stopvaxpassports.org on this global governance gambit, I call it, that Xi Jinping, the Chinese communists, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and others are seeking to achieve through the vehicle of increased powers being granted to the World Health Organization. And one of the participants in this program, a very eminent international law expert by the name of Dr. Francis Boyle, PhD, a professor at the University of Illinois, said something really chilling. He said, what is in the works here? What is now not just in prospect, but imminent? Thanks to this cabal and what they're having underway at the World Health Organization, is nothing less than, quote, a worldwide totalitarian police state, unquote. And that would be because of the combination of the increased powers that this international organization would have to tell us what to do about public health emergencies, what their digital global ID would constitute, and the convergence with that of the central bank digital currencies, all of which give rise to something very much like the Chinese social credit system, as it's called. This is something that it seems to me is of extreme concern, and I wonder if you agree.
Well, certainly, Frank. Technology has given the upper hand to governments to control people. And of course, we've seen this in places like China, as you mentioned, the social credit system, and just the virtually total surveillance state that the Communist Party has been able to put in place. What they want to do is to supersize this and bring it to the world. We got to remember, you know, there's this notion, well, you know, we've got epidemics, we need to have global control. The point is, the World Health Organization actually spread COVID-19. It would not have become the epidemic and pandemic that it did were it not for the WHO. Because we've got to remember that in January of 2020, which is a critical month, the WHO spread Chinese propaganda, which WHO doctors knew was not true. The WHO was trying to tell the world that SARS-CoV-2, the pathogen causing this disease, was not readily transmissible human to human. And that was ridiculous from what we were able to see in December of 2019, but also the doctors at the WHO who were involved in coronavirus type diseases, and there have been several of them before, they knew that it was highly contagious. So here we are giving, you know, control to this global group that actually was responsible at China's behest for spreading COVID-19. This is insane. I mean, we need to have enhanced defenses for epidemics because what the Chinese are planning, these specific ethnic genetic attacks. Clearly we should be doing this on a national basis, not some global body that China has extraordinary influence in.
Well, as you say, Gordon, we've had hard experience with what an organization that they essentially control, the Chinese Communist Party, can do to actually compound a pandemic or another public health emergency. And it would be the height of folly to not only greatly enhance the power of such an organization, but also ignore the prospect that the Chinese would weaponize it further in the event that they were to engage in some sort of further warfare against us, kinetic, if you will, but devastating in any event. And Gordon, I just have to ask, I mean, the idea that the Chinese Communist Party would be utilizing international organizations to achieve their strategic objectives is, again, something that I think most Americans can't comprehend. The idea is the UN, for example, is just all the world coming together. And yet, Alex Newman, a man who participated in yesterday's webinar, and again, it can be found at stopvaxpassports.org. Folks, I strongly encourage you to take a look at it. Has pointed out the Chinese actually have a whole cadre of diplomats trained and essentially given the mission of taking over these international organizations. And it's not just the World Health Organization. It's really all of them, basically. Is that correct?
Yes. about a little under a quarter of the UN's multilateral groups, like the WHO, are actually headed by a Chinese national. And the WHO is headed by an Ethiopian, but who is controlled by China. So China has made great efforts. And you know, from the very start, Mao Zedong realized that he could legitimize his state by going towards smaller countries and getting them on board. So his diplomacy was headed towards Africa, which has an extraordinary number of UN members. So really, this has been they've taken it over, and you know, we've been asleep. We legitimized communist China, and we're now seeing the results of that.
We're bearing the consequences for sure. Gordon, you've raised the alarm repeatedly. We appreciate you doing so here. Come back to us soon with updates if you would, and God bless you in the meantime.
Take care. Thank you, Frank.
We'll be right back with more right after this.
Destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest. He's Dr. Peter McCullough. He is a man I've come to admire enormously, as I think tens of millions of Americans have, for his courage to face COVID-19, which happens to be the title of his best-selling book with John Leake. It is required reading if you want to understand how we got into the fix we're in at the moment, a fix that is not only relevant directly to the pandemic that we've experienced, but also to what the people who brought it to us have in mind for us next. And we're going to talk about that with Peter in a moment. But first, let me just also commend to you all the really important Substack that Peter McCullough and John Leake have entitled Courageous Discourse. It is an incredible online resource for breaking news and other information about all of these matters, and it's really a very important contribution to the public policy debate and awareness about what's at stake here. Dr. McCullough, welcome back to Securing America. It's so good to have you with us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for all you do. I wanted to start by just asking you to sort of update us on, among other things, what we now know about both the origins of this pandemic and the, well, fraud that's been perpetrated on us in terms of how best to deal with it.
90 days ago, the official U.S. government narrative was that the virus arose from nature in China somewhere. And now with the House Select Oversight Committee for the Origins of the Coronavirus and Senate investigations, all the U.S. agencies have reversed course and capitulated, saying, yes, it came out of the Wuhan lab, and yes, the U.S. had a role in this, a big role in this. Now, academically, we knew that Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, had published that they had engineered the chimeric virus in the Wuhan lab. They published it in Nature Communications and Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So this is already in the literature since 2015. None of the committees have pulled the Baric papers just to hold them up as proof that's where the virus came from. So there's almost
no. When you say Dr. They, in this case, you mean they meaning Dr. Baric himself plus his Chinese counterpart,
right,
the Bat Lady, right?
The Bat Lady. But, I mean, don't forget that these papers say they created it. Josh Hawley still hasn't pulled the paper and put it up on the screen. Neither has Senator Ron Johnson or Comer, for instance, Comer and Chip Roy. It's like right in the open. So they've been interviewing people. Now they're kind of getting to the answer. Now we're up to a real sticking point, because the Congress vote 419-0 to declassify all the U.S. documents, since now National Security Administration, Department of Energy, FBI, NIH, they all say it came out of the lab. We want to know what America did, our agencies did, with respect to creation of the virus. And now we learn Averill Haynes, who's our Director of National Intelligence, Averill Haynes, is blocking the documents. Hawley has sent a letter saying, listen, you're 10 days late. And you know who Haynes is? She was part of the Event 201 planning meeting for COVID in 2019. So wait a minute. She knows George Gao. He's the Chinese CDC director. She's in on that.
Who also participated in Event 201.
You're right. Who also participated. Yeah. Listen,
you can't make this stuff up. It's just unbelievable, really. Complicity at every level. So, Doctor, when you look at this fact that it is a biological warfare laboratory's product with the engineering help of American, not just physicians and scientists, but also Dr. Fauci and other, you know, government officials, Defense Department among them. This is a travesty of the first order. And is there any conclusion to be drawn other than that they've known for quite some time the truth and have simply withheld it, or in fact, in Averill Haynes' case, continuing to try to withhold it from the American people?
Undoubtedly, there's documents that will say the U.S. was a part of this with the National Institutes of Health and Ralph Baric for years. You know who also has been recently implicated? Dr. Peter Hotez at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. He's been the front man for vaccine advocacy in the United States. And you know what we found out is that he had National Institutes of Allergy and Immunology grants, NIH grants, and development projects for SARS-CoV-2 vaccines as biodefense strategy in 2015 and 2016. And guess with who? With actually Dr. Jiang from Fudan University in Shanghai. So this has all come out. Zero Hedge has a piece out on this today. It's all coming out. All these people who have been fronting this story to America that this arose out of nature and that they're trying to save Americans, they were actually in on it.
Yeah, and Hotez, as I recall, is one of those who's been savaging Robert F. Kennedy Jr., among others. And has he just been given a new job? Am I understanding that correctly, that he's got a government gig now?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he has been, in a sense, Fauci's been, in a sense, ushered out. And now Hotez has been ushered in. You know, this all blew up because Robert F. Kennedy went on Rogan. Rogan says, well, why don't we get together and talk about it? You know, I communicated with Rogan and RFK. I said, listen, I'd be happy to sit down with Hotez and go over vaccine safety. You know, I have about 685 listings in the National Library of Medicine. It takes about 25 to be full professor. Hotez has 500. So he's in my league. He's junior to me, but he's still in my league. I said, I'll sit down with him. I know how to go over evidence. Let's discuss vaccine safety. And let me tell you, RFK and Rogan told me Hotez is not coming to the table. This guy is scared to death.
I just wanted to ask you about what we have been learning, among other things, through the deep dive that's been done of Pfizer's own documents concerning its so-called vaccine for SARS-CoV-2. You've been doing your own analysis of this, of course, as has our friend Naomi Wolf. I'm anxious to get your take on what we've learned to date, sir.
I want everyone to know that every drug, including vaccines, the companies have a 90-day obligatory safety monitoring period once they release the products. And Pfizer had that. And so that means when Pfizer was released December 10th, 2020, if people had side effects and they called Pfizer, Pfizer had to take down the vignette. They had to take down the information, who the patients were, what happened. And that regulatory dossier is a requirement of the US FDA, and it's also a publicly transparent document that everyone can review. This happens for every drug. So what happened is after the first 90 days, people started asking Pfizer, where's the document? Where's the dossier? This was early in 2021. And so ultimately, this went, when it came to a court proceedings, we said, listen, you have to release your dossier. We want to see what, you know, if is it safe or not. And the FDA got involved, and they tried to block this release for 55 years. The FDA did. And this is, you know, it's a big dossier. And we, you know, the other sides, they were pushing for freedom of information, said, no, you got to release it. Finally, it was released. We've analyzed it. Naomi Wolf at the Daily Clout really put together a team to start digging into this. This is a big, heavy-duty pharmaceutical document. I can tell you what the top line was. The top line was Pfizer knew about 1,223 deaths in that 90-day period. Some of the deaths occurring right after people took the shots. This was astonishing. Record numbers of side effects of new diseases we'd never seen before. And, you know, Pfizer had enough.
Let me just ask you, sir, just as a point of calibration. In the history of drug developments and vaccinations in particular, when there is a loss of life, typically, what does it take to get a drug pulled?
Loss of life means shut it down. I can tell you, I've chaired data safety monitoring boards for big programs, and I've shut down big programs with a DSMB committee and the FDA. 5, 10,
but
15.
A thousand? 50. A thousand?
No, no.
In fact, well, 5, before 10, then?
5, 10, 15, 50. No more than that. I'm telling you right now, you know, early in January, we only had about 27 million people who took the shot. It should have been shut down. With the 1976 swine flu vaccine, it was 23 deaths when they decided to shut it down, and ultimately it rose to 53 deaths, 550 cases of Guillain-Barré. Listen, this was way over the line. Pfizer should have pulled it. The FDA should have told Pfizer to pull it, and they should have announced to the world. Moderna should never have come out.
We have to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to drill down a bit further on this phenomenon. I guess it's called regulatory capture, where the FDA clearly was not doing its job of looking out for the public safety, public interest. They were doing what was going to be good for Pfizer. You've had a lot of experience with all of this, Dr. McCullough, and been incredibly courageous in taking it on in this regard especially. But, you know, the Pfizer data is so damning. Everyone needs to be taking aboard insights from it. We'll talk a bit more about that with you on the other side of this short break. Stay tuned, folks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Harvard-trained attorney and PhD Francis Boyle is a preeminent academic specializing in international law. For over 5 decades, he has closely studied treaties and organizations, many of them the product of ambitious utopians seeking to ban war, redistribute power and wealth, and otherwise reorder the world. In the course of an extraordinarily important webinar yesterday, Dr. Boyle warned that for the first time in history, such globalists are poised to create a, quote, worldwide totalitarian police state, unquote. They would do so via what amount to 2 World Health Organization treaties now being finalized with the aggressive support of the Chinese Communist Party, Davos oligarchs, and the Biden administration.
These accords would cede American states' constitutional rights to determine healthcare policy and crush our national sovereignty. Francis Boyle and our sovereignty coalition agree that we must withdraw from the World Health Organization now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Dr. Peter McCullough, one of our most distinguished and accomplished medical practitioners, is with us, I'm very proud to say, once again. He has been working tirelessly in the face of COVID-19, not just tirelessly, but courageously, to help the rest of us understand what we're up against here and minimize the loss of life and other deadly impacts of both the disease itself to some extent, but most especially the vaccinations that were supposed to protect us against them. And Doctor, we were just discussing the Pfizer documents that were, if the FDA had had its way, going to be withheld from public scrutiny. Fortunately, they were made available. And Naomi tells the story that the Pfizer folks kind of contemptuously laughed when they said, "Okay, here you go." They dumped these thousands and thousands and thousands of documents on the public and said, presumably you won't be able to wend your way through this. Well, by crowdsourcing it, as you say, Dr. Wolf and this marvelous team from the War Room Posse, Steve Bannon's show, have really done incredible work helping to make this documentation available and what you've done to help further explain what we've learned. I just wanted to pick up on a point that we started talking about in that regard, and that is the loss of life. And this has been horrific and well in excess of past experience in terms of pulling drugs that have been so flawed. But that's only part of the story, isn't it? Talk a little bit about the other repercussions of the Pfizer drugs, and I guess Moderna's documentation will be out shortly, and I suspect we'll see the same thing there, don't you?
Sure. I just want to say that Moderna has also concealed their regulatory dossier and only forced under court order. Should be out shortly. Janssen never provided theirs, and Novavax still to this day. So Americans should be disturbed that the vaccine companies have been stonewalling the public on vaccine safety, and this is now out in the open. Pfizer also recorded over 1,000 new diseases caused by the vaccines. And they fell into categories of cardiovascular, neurologic, thrombotic, or various blood clotting syndromes, and then hematologic syndromes. They had reported information on pregnancy. Remember, Pfizer excluded pregnant women who couldn't have, couldn't guarantee contraception during the trials. But then when it was released, the government encouraged pregnant women to take it, and then Pfizer recorded loss of fetal life, maternal complications. The report is a safety disaster.
Encouraged is an interesting term. I mean, to some extent, what the government was doing, in the FDA and the CDC and the White House task forces and so on, was really hectoring people to take these vaccinations. If they weren't actually mandating them, they were certainly going beyond just encouraging them.
It's true. Some countries had no jab, no job policies that effectively forced people to take the vaccines. Now we learn they weren't safe.
By a long shot. And those other diseases that are afflicting particularly younger people, who were at minimal risk from the disease itself. It just is a travesty on so many different levels. I use the term fraud. Would you say that that seems to be an apt description if it's not actually murderous intent? You know, it certainly was defrauding the public in terms of the safety.
It certainly is. You know, fraud is basically intentional deception. And we think that's the case. Do you know, to this day, various government agencies, HHS and CDC, are still advertising the vaccines, even though there's no emergency. President Biden dropped the emergency. Emergency use authorization should have been withdrawn. These products should be off the market. Instead, our government agency is still advertising them as safe and effective, but not disclosing any of these safety outcomes.
Talk a little bit about the boosters and where they fit into this larger picture. The original vaccine obviously was not very effective against the original disease and dangerous to boot. But how about these boosters and what is now being, you know, still rather assiduously promoted as something especially older Americans should take?
The boosters may be actually more dangerous than the original shots. On our courageous discourse, we summarize many of these cases. One by Hoshida and colleagues. This is a disaster. A 14-year-old girl in Japan dies the next day after a booster. They do an autopsy. All of her lungs are rotted out with inflammation. I mean, she's a perfectly healthy 14-year-old girl who's just now gone. This is within a day. Frank, I'm telling you, the boosters, appear to be a disaster. The original vaccines are gone now. All we have is these boosters. The BA4, BA5 variant has been long gone, so the boosters have no theoretical benefit. And still some Americans, unfortunately, are forced to take them.
This is troubling on every level, but I can only imagine, and I know this is part of what has animated you so powerfully for years now, is this is so much at odds with, you know, competent medical practice, to say nothing of, you know, the Hippocratic Oath. you've got to just say, when you knew that there were other methods that could actually help people that were prevented from being used, and these were demanded be used, the mind reels at the level of really, I think, criminal malfeasance.
It's true. Probably two crimes. You mentioned one, fraud. The other one is mass negligent homicide. People died directly due to the vaccines. You know, there's over 3,400 peer-reviewed papers now published on fatal and non-fatal vaccine injury syndrome, hundreds and hundreds of autopsy studies that have concluded the vaccine is the cause of death.
It's concluded that, and yet we still have the companies involved and the government and the medical authorities promoting their use. Will there be accountability, I guess, is the question that I want to turn to. We've got one more short break. Dr. McCullough is going to stay with us, and we're so grateful for your time, sir. When we talk about the mess we're in, I want to talk with you about an organization that I think played a significant role beyond those that we've mentioned in making that so, and that would be the World Health Organization and the advisability of making it more powerful. That and more right after this. We're back. Dr. Peter McCullough is in the house virtually. It's a house call after a fashion. Thank you for doing it, Doctor. It's really a privilege to have you with us, and I cannot tell you how much I admire the work you've been doing, often with your colleague John Leek, notably with your wonderful book, The Courage to Face COVID-19, and the Courageous Discourse at Substack blog that you're running. It's fantastic. I did want to ask you, sir, when we go back to the early days of this pandemic, probably they were earlier than we've been led to believe, but early days in terms of the public awareness of it all, an organization that played a direct role in telling us things like, well, this virus came from nature. This virus was not transmissible among humans. This virus should be appropriately treated with lockdowns and masks mandates and travel restrictions and the like. That would be the World Health Organization. And at the time, it had an advisory role. And I want to ask you about the quality of that advice, for starters, and then ask you about the advisability, if I can use that expression, of giving it compulsory powers, which is now in the offing.
You know, we outlined that the WHO, we believe, is firmly in the biopharmaceutical complex, as we have, you know, really revealed in our book, the WHO playing a central role. We knew the WHO was on the wrong side of the COVID pandemic early in 2020, because when the WHO, you know, asked for countries to have eminent scientists go and evaluate Wuhan, China as the origin of the virus, Rear Admiral Brett Giroir from the United States appointed three independent scientists to go over. The WHO rejected them. You know who they wanted and who they got? Peter Daszak, who is the head of the Equal Health Alliance. He was shuttling the plans to the Chinese, you know, for the papers that Barrett published in 2015. Equal Health Alliance is right in the papers. So the WHO wanted somebody who was already on the inside and who was not going to, in a sense, reveal what was going on in the Wuhan lab. The WHO at that point in time was clear that they were on the side of a conspiracy to cover up a global security threat.
Well, it's clear now. I don't know that it was as clear at the time as it should have been. There was no disclosure of all of this. In fact, Daschle is one of the inspectors of the Wuhan laboratory. It was just preposterous on the face of it. So much malfeasance and so little time. But to the question, sir, of the day. We did a webinar yesterday. I was talking to our friend Gordon Chang about it earlier in the program. One of the most powerful I've ever participated in. It was about this idea of the World Health Organization being empowered essentially to dictate to us public health policy in the event of whatever its director general might describe as a public health emergency of international concern. And not only having the authority unchecked, unilateral, to dictate what is such an emergency, but also to dictate what we must do about it. Based on what you've just described in the manner of how they abused that authority that they had at the time, is this a tolerable next step, sir?
Countries should withdraw from the WHO immediately. This is a disaster. You know, Tedros, who's not a doctor, not a highly educated man, he has already told the world there's going to be another pandemic. The Pandemic Treaty Alliance wants dominion over all plants, animals, and humans in the world, binding by international law. It's going to be a disaster. I can tell you right now, this looks bad, sounds bad, and we need to get out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And by the way, interestingly enough, one of the most powerful presentations in the course of this webinar, and I'm going to flog the website once again, folks, stopvaxpassports.org, was by Dr. Frances Boyle, a man who has not a medical degree, but a PhD from Harvard University, no less, as well as a law degree from there, magna cum laude, and has an incredible record of accomplishment over 50 years now in international law and treaties. And he says, never before have we seen anything like this, which is globalists poised to achieve what he calls, quote, a worldwide totalitarian police state as a result of this arrangement of giving the WHO these powers, sir. And what he's essentially getting at is that all of the building blocks are being put into place, including a digital ID for everybody in the world, and subjecting all of this, as you say, human, plant, animal health to the dictates of Tedros Ghebreyesus. It's essentially the social credit system of China being imposed globally and utterly at the expense of our constitutional rights and republic, for that matter.
It's true. You know, WHO heavily funded by the Chinese, North Koreans, and the Gates Foundation. It's an NGO. It's not an elected body. Trump had the right instincts. Pull out of the WHO.
Yeah, we absolutely should. Finally, sir, I want to just ask again, your courage has been rewarded, if I can use that expression, by extreme efforts to censor you and otherwise punish you, including, I think, your board certification and so on. Give us an update on what you've experienced in the face of all this.
You know, my medical license has been fine all the way through. The American Board of Internal Medicine, I'm in a, you know, protracted appeal process on an attempt for them to decertify me. But American doctors have held up okay. But there's, you know, a couple thousand in France that have been sidelined, about 500 in Australia. This is worldwide. Any doctor that stands in the way of this narrative is going to be hit. And, you know, many are on the sidelines just watching what happens, but we need more to step out and stop this freight train.
Amen. Well, and all the more reason why we don't want this World Health Organization to be able to compel them to do the wrong sorts of things for patients like us in the future. Dr. Peter McCullough, God bless you, sir. Thank you for your book. Thank you for your websites. Thank you for your great work. Keep it up, sir. Come back to us if you will as well. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.